This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yahya Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is the main opposition in Zimbabwe, and they are maintaining that this election was a sham, and they're dismissing it in its entirety.
That's Kudzai Zenawashi reporting on today's press conference by the opposition in Zimbabwe. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's army chief traveled to Egypt today on his first trip abroad since the outbreak of war in April. And the UN Refugee Agency warns that Niger's political crisis could rapidly deteriorate into a humanitarian crisis. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Zimbabwe's government has declared incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa the winner of last week's presidential election. The opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, has rejected the result. Outside observers like the South African Development Community, SADC, and the European Union have issued statements pointing to profound flaws in the election process. For the latest, we have Kudzai Zenawashi, who just returned from a press briefing the opposition gave in Harare.
Well, the press conference was addressed by Gift Ostalos, who is the deputy spokesperson for Citizens Coalition for Change. This is the main opposition in Zimbabwe, and they are maintaining that this election was a sham, and they're dismissing it in its entirety, just to quote his words. So they are calling for another election that will be overseen by other bodies such as SADC and Africa Union, which they were calling upon to come to their aid and also to mediate in this crisis that Zimbabwe finds itself in. So they are calling it the roadmap back to democracy and legitimacy for the country.
So what is ZANU-PF saying about all this?
Well, as far as we are concerned, ZANU-PF is celebrating the victory. They won fair and square. And there are also reports that preparations are actually underway for the inauguration. So this is ZANU-PF's position currently. Also to note is that after elections, there is a seven-day period that if the opposition naturally would want to take the route to approach the courts, which didn't work out for them in 2018, then they should file their papers within that period. But at the press conference, also to note was that the opposition is not clear if they're going to take that route again, and they didn't want to express whether they are, in as much as they said they are dismissing the election in its entirety. It's also not clear that are they dismissing or are they letting go of the victories that they've gained in this election, which is within the councils and also within the parliamentary seats that they gained.
Besides the CCC, you know, the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, and the European Union have issued statements pointing to profound flaws in the election process. So Zimbabwe's political instability has made it a target of Western sanctions, and the growing influence of competing powers such as China and Russia has pushed Mnangagwa further from the West. So what might a second Mnangagwa term mean for the future of Zimbabwe's engagement with the US, China, and Russia?
I think if we are to look at the coming 5 years for Mnangagwa, I think they will continue re-engaging with Russia, Belarus, China, and those isolated nations which they've been rekindling with. And then I think they'll still hold on to the mantra that they are re-engaging, whereas they're not meeting up, fulfilling the benchmarks that are required for re-engagement, particularly with the Western countries, where Western countries are calling on the human rights situation to be addressed and many other issues.
What are the regional implications of the vote's result for Southern Africa?
I think we're in uncharted waters here. This is all new to us. I think one of the indications that we are seeing is that for the first time, SADC has called it what it is. They've not sided with the ruling government, and there seems to also be some mixed feelings within SADC itself. This can be seen. The president of South Africa has sent in congratulatory messages to Mnangagwa. The president of Tanzania and Namibia, if I'm not mistaken, they've also sent in their congratulatory messages. Whereas other members, particularly Zambia, also hasn't sent in any congratulatory messages yet. And also to note is that the current head of SADC is the Zambia president. So we are yet to see where this takes us in terms of in the SADC region. But also, it's also critical to note that these bodies were here in Zimbabwe observing the elections, and they have highlighted the irregularities that we saw with the election, the delays, the intimidation. So we're yet to see if all that is just going to be in those reports, or if it will gravitate to something, or it will go in vain.
Kudzai Zanawashi reporting from Harare. George Charamba, Mnangagwa's spokesperson, told VOA's Zimbabwe service that Chamisa needs to soothe his ego and recognize that Mnangagwa is the winner and will be president. He says once Chamisa acknowledges that, it will be easy for Chamisa to meet with Mnangagwa. Even though official results are still not in, Alberto Ondo Ossa, Gabon President Ali Bongo's main rival, claimed on Monday that he had won Saturday's election and called on the head of state to organize the transfer of power. For clarification on the election results, we turn to the chief of VOA's French to Africa service, Chief Timothy Donangmai. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Timothy.
Thank you, Yayesh.
So, according to Gabonese law, only the Gabonese election center is empowered by law to proclaim the victor. Is there an official victor in the Gabon election yet?
Not yet, yes. Everyone in Gabon is still waiting for the results of Saturday's presidential election. And the Gabonese Center for Elections has yet to even give an account of how the vote counting is going. So at this time, people in Gabon don't know anything about the elections. And I just heard our report from our stringer in Libreville. He said people were rushing to get home because of the curfew that is still in place. So at this time, no results.
Of course, there is nobody knows what's going on because the government of Gabon has also cut the internet. And like you said, announced a nightly curfew as voting drew close on Saturday. So the curfew is still on, but is the internet still down?
The internet is still down. And the Gabon's government said they took all those decisions because of the statement by opposition leader Albert Ondo Ossa, which you earlier referenced. When he said that he won and that President Ali Bongo needed to hand over the reins of the country to him. So the government said that statement could be a source of violence, and that's why a curfew was necessary in the country, as well as the interruption in internet coverage.
And you've followed Gabonese politics for a long while. Bongo, 64, who succeeded his father Omar in 2009, is seeking a third term. Do you see the Bongo dynasty losing?
I don't know. I can't recall what head of state, African head of state, who said you don't organize elections to lose them. So it would be hard for President Ali Bongo to lose, especially in this context where no one knows what's going on. The electoral, the Center for Elections is not saying anything. So it's hard to tell really how this will turn out.
The vote is a much anticipated test of support for Bongo, whose detractors say he has done too little to funnel Gabon's oil wealth, you know, 2.3 million people living in poverty. And Bongo is saying that, you know, he will create more jobs, boost microloan programs, cut public school fees. You think his plea of improving the country will even resonate with the people?
Well, whether it resonates or not, this time around the situation is very different. You know, Gabon has a one-round presidential election. So previously, the president, Ali Bongo Ondimba, would face several opposition candidates, and they would split the vote. So he had just to win the majority of the votes, not the absolute majority, but just the majority, and to get elected. But this time around, the major opposition parties decided to support one candidate, and that's Mr. Albert Ondo Ossa. And so now this is a new challenge for President Ali Bongo, and we're waiting to see what happens.
And lastly, Timothy, tell us a little about Alberto Ondo Ossa. What kind of a person is he?
Mr. Albert Ondo Ossa, he's a university professor, economics professor, and very active in civil society. And so, for years he's been in many of the groups that were challenging what was going on in the country. And this time he's decided to step up the plate and to be the leader, the standard bearer of all the opposition, the major opposition groups. And that's why he feels so confident. And he announced that he is the winner of these elections, even though he didn't provide any documentation for his claims.
When will the official announcement be?
And that's the situation here. The Gabonese Center for Elections is supposed to announce a calendar of how the results will be released, but until now we haven't heard anything. So this is really confusing.
So we'll wait and see. VOA's French to Africa Service Chief, Timothy Dongam Ai, thank you for your input.
My pleasure.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Sudan's army chief traveled to Egypt today on his first trip abroad since the outbreak of war in April, with the latest violence killing dozens of civilians in the battered Darfur region. As Abdel Fattah al-Burhan departed, medics and witnesses told the French press agency, AFP, that 39 civilians were killed, mostly women and children, in shelling in Nayala, Sudan's second city in South Darfur state, in fighting between the army and the paramilitary forces. Sudan's ruling Sovereign Council says Burhan is holding talks with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, a key ally, on developments in Sudan and bilateral ties. On Monday, Burhan was in Port Sudan, where he vowed to troops that he would end treason of the rapid support forces and mercenaries who he said come from all over the world. Yesterday, the commander of the RSF, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, detailed a 10-point vision to end the war and restore civilian rule based on democratic norms and a single national military institution. The UN Refugee Agency warns that Niger's political crisis could rapidly deteriorate into a humanitarian crisis amidst ongoing attacks by non-state armed groups as ECOWAS-imposed sanctions began to bite. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
With no political solution in sight, UN agencies are developing contingency plans for whatever emergency may arise. Since the military coup ousted the democratically elected president on July 26th, a cloud of uncertainty has hung over the country. The UN Refugee Agency's representative in Niger, Emmanuel Guignac, says violence and attacks by armed groups, especially near the Mali and Burkina Faso borders, have displaced more than 20,000 people in the last month. During the same period, he says up to 2,500 refugees, mainly from Mali and Burkina Faso, and some from Nigeria, have fled as refugees into Niger. On a visit to Geneva from his post in Niamey, Guignard told journalists today that Niger's status as a hub for refugees is in jeopardy. He says recent events have heightened protection risks for refugees, asylum seekers, and their hosts.
It's also a route, a migration route, towards North Africa and Libya in particular. And we do have asylum seekers or people in need of international protection who are mixed with these movements. The borders are closed. Will these flow continue or not? If they do, they have to happen in a way that is far more underground than what they used to be.
This, he says, will likely lead to more exploitation and abuse. Guignard says the threat of military intervention by ECOWAS, though seemingly unlikely, hangs in the air and must be taken seriously. He says the UNHCR is particularly concerned by ECOWAS sanctions that don't include exceptions for humanitarian relief. If sanctions are not lifted, he warns the inability to bring sufficient humanitarian aid into the country will have a catastrophic effect.
The fact that people don't have access to, as they used to have, to food commodities, and the scarcity of goods in general will lead to a number of protection risks that will develop. We're talking about early marriage, sexual violence, trafficking, and exploitation.
He says the UNHCR has a well-developed monitoring system that tracks incidents of abuse. In July, he says there were 255 protection incidents, including kidnappings, gender-based violence, and domestic violence in Niger. He says this data is in line with the rest of the year. However, he says UNHCR teams have witnessed a sharp 50% increase in the number of incidents between July 26th and July 31st over previous weeks in July. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Senegal, many people are talking about the detention and deteriorating health of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, who has been on hunger strike. Sonko was arrested in late July. He's been charged with fomenting insurrection, criminal association in connection with a terrorist enterprise, and undermining state security for incidents dating back to 2021. In a separate case in June, a court sentenced him to 2 years in prison for morally corrupting a young woman, a conviction that makes him ineligible to run in next year's election. His sentencing in that case sparked clashes that left at least 16 dead. Many of Sonko's supporters say the charges are politically motivated and aimed at keeping him from challenging President Macky Sall in the election. Sonko went on hunger strike in late July and has been hospitalized in intensive care in Dakar. Reporter Alpha Jallo spoke with people in Dakar to get their thoughts on the situation. This man says Sonko has caused problems for the country, but he says if the authorities decide to pardon him, that would be okay because we need only peace in the country. Babukar Darma is a university student. He thinks if Sonko's health worsens, it could cause problems for Senegal.
You know, Sonko is very tired currently because he risked to lose his life at the jail. And once that this is happening at the jail, you know, all African people, all Senegalese people, and at the international level, this information will be forwarded. And once that we arrive at the level, I think that, you know, the situation will be very complicated and we must treat it right now before going deep to the situation. Thank you very much.
Fatou Mahamadou Ba, however, has conflicted feelings about Sonko. She says Sonko has caused many problems in this country because of his radical political approach. But now that he is arrested and is in bad shape, the only thing I can offer is to pray for him. This man, however, says...
African politician dal bo xamne ñu ngi lay
jël. This man who says has Sonko has been wrongly detained says Osman is a great politician who is bringing in a new system of politics not only in Senegal but the entire African continent, and he says President Sall should do his best to release him because Sonko's arrest and detention is politically motivated. A federal judge has set the trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump for next March on charges of plotting to overturn the 2020 presidential election. This puts the historic trial right in the middle of the 2024 presidential campaign, with Trump the frontrunner among Republican candidates. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Lawyers for former President Donald Trump were back in Washington Monday for a hearing that set a March 4, 2024 date for his trial in conjunction with his alleged effort to stop the peaceful transfer of power at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2020. Trump's lawyers had no comment for VOA, but expressed their disappointment to the judge. They had asked to put off the trial until April 2026, after the November 2024 presidential elections. The prosecution wanted the proceeding to start January 2nd with jury selection in December. One expert told VOA he believes U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan is a strong judge who made a wise decision. Alan Lichtman, a presidential historian at American University, spoke to VOA via Zoom.
And she made some very good points that the public really needs to know. They need to know one way or the other before this election, you know, whether Trump is guilty of these very serious charges.
A grand jury of citizens in Washington voted to indict Trump on 4 felony counts in the case, including conspiracy to defraud the United States and conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. He has pleaded not guilty to the charges and has repeatedly claimed, without evidence, that the charges are politically motivated.
How can my corrupt political opponent, crooked Joe Biden, put me on trial during an election campaign that I'm winning by a lot, but forcing me nevertheless to spend time and money away from the campaign trail in order to fight bogus, made-up accusations and charges?
Trump has said the indictments are only boosting his support among voters. But one of his Republican opponents, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, disagrees, saying there is no way Trump can win a general election.
Republican voters have to understand we can't win with Donald Trump, and that's why I addressed it very directly.
Many of the January 6 events happened out in the open for everyone to see. Presidential historian Alan Lichtman says, leaving Trump vulnerable to a possible conviction ahead of the November 2024 presidential elections.
What if Trump is sitting in jail, which is not impossible either? Technically, he could still run, but would the Republicans really want, at the top of their ticket, a guy who's been convicted of subverting our democracy?
Trump is the first former American president to face criminal charges. If convicted, he could spend the rest of his life behind bars. He is also facing charges in New York, Georgia, and Florida. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Congo's army says fighters for a militia group attacked a village in the country's restive east, setting off a battle that killed 14 people. According to the Associated Press, an army spokesman says armed men from the Kodeko militia assaulted Gobu village Sunday evening, killing 9 civilians and 1 Congolese soldier. 4 attackers also died in the fighting, while 2 soldiers and 2 civilians were wounded. Violence has been surging across eastern Congo, where conflict has flared for decades. More than 120 armed groups are fighting in the region, most for land and control of mines with valuable minerals, while some groups are trying to protect their communities. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. on behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.